And so the Mishnah on Kaf Gimel Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Ketzad botkinim et ha'edim. So what's the procedure? Okay, the Edim have gotten there, they've been Mechal Shabbos, they haven't been Mechal Shabbos. So now what do? They gather in that courtyard, that was the last sugya that we saw. And what is the actual process of investigating the witnesses? Zug sheba rishon botkino to rishon. First come, first served. You show up, you get your ticket, they call your number. I had to go to the post office today. It's terrible.
Yeah, Amazon.
Because Amazon has taken over everything.
Much better than it was last week. You know, we went out Friday, I was very happy.
In Yerushalayim, you can make an appointment on your phone in advance, and you get there, you know, you can skip the line. But they didn't have that in the Mikdash.
We were there on Friday, and I was very happy.
But you didn't have that in the Mikdash. You first come, first served. So you have the first zug. Now it's not necessarily that the zug came together, right? But you can, he made it.
Oh wow!
I hope I didn't guilt you into it. We were sitting around the dinner table. I got your text that you couldn't make it, and I dictated into the phone what I dictated, which was, "Oi, we need you because we need to understand the circulation of the heavenly bodies." And Lonnie said, "Tom's not coming to shear."
Oh, I thought you were talking to Siri. Talking to Lonnie?
I was talking to Siri to dictate, but she overheard me. So, in other words, a zug can show up together, or a yachid can show up. But a yachid alone is no good. You need to have a zug. So, you have a zug, which is either they came together, or they had a shidduch there in the chatzer, and they bring them in, and the elder is examined first. Obviously, they're examined separately. You know, we put the other one in the soundproof booth while the first one is being examined. V'omrin lo, why do you have to? Why do you have to examine the oldest first? Probably. Yeah, probably. I mean, it's just like the minug.
My question is, if you examine them separately, what difference does it make if it's a zug or not a zug?
Ah, no, because that's the point. That edus is only relevant
if you have two. Okay.
We'll see momentarily that if one of the edim in a zug is no good, the other one is still in the running. Right. Someone else can come along and join him. But in principle, your edus is only relevant in the context of there being a zug.
What is it?
V'omrin lo, emor, ketzad ra'ita et ha'levana. Tell us how you saw the moon. Lifnei ha'chama o la'achar ha'chama. The Gemara will discuss what this means. Litzfona o ledroma. Did you see the moon? So look, this is a perfect example here. Sorry for the folks on tape that do not have this visual, but there's the horizon, right? The sun sets at a certain point.
You're not talking about the lights reflected in the window, right?
The sun sets at a certain point, you know, like in the summer, the sun sets a little further north, and in the winter, a little further south. But looking out over our valley, you can see, I'm sure people do this, you take, you know, like you go out at sun, you get this more in the summer than in the winter, right? But go onto Facebook, what do you have throughout the whole summer? People posting pictures of the sunset at this, right over our vadi. Every night there's a beautiful sunset. But you can see, and presumably there are people that can look at it and know what date the picture was taken based upon where on the horizon, where relative to the shul in Neve Daniel, the sun has set. You know, there are people, Van Gogh's painting Starry Night?
I've read
so there are people that, people in your line of hobby who like have examined Starry Night to determine exactly where Van Gogh was standing when he painted it, what time of the year it was, what time of the night it was, based upon the constellations. Now, of course, that purports that this very impressionistic painting corresponded to an astronomical reality, which you don't
know.
Or a real place, right?
I mean, you see the Big Dipper pretty clearly in that picture.
Right.
And also there's the, the screen? Is that also there?
Oh, do they also have the screen?
And that's apparently also associated with that volcano that erupted.
Oh, the Frankenstein volcano.
I forget which one, but it was the year with no summers, year with no summer. And
lets you know how Frankenstein was written.
Is it on the home?
There was a volcanic eruption in Indonesia, right?
Yeah.
It was a massive volcanic eruption. And it cast so much ash into the atmosphere that crops failed all over Europe because there wasn't enough sun. And that summer was exceedingly rainy because when the ash gets into the atmosphere, the water vapors condense on it and it rains.
We had a mini version of that a few decades ago.
Well, something in Iceland.
So, yes.
Mount St. Helens.
Mount
St. Helens. Right.
Yeah, but there was also that. There was also that Iceland.
There was a group of vacationing
English nobles in Italy, spending their summer. Locked up in their chateau or wherever they were because there was nothing to do because it was yucky out. So how do they pass the time?
Telling stories.
There was a competition. Who could tell the scariest story? And the winner was
Mary Shelley,
who came up with Frankenstein. True story.
That's a really interesting piece of information to have in your...
Oh, you've got no idea which...
It took 3 days to figure it out, though. Because originally the World Tone Association felt very inadequate, and then she went back to the room and she was thinking...
Two people actually came up with it.
Wow. It's a fairly well-known... Okay. If you know anything about Frankenstein, it's...
It's
one of my favorite monsters.
Anyway, go back to the Mishnah. So you can tell, based upon where the sun set, right, so we want to know, is the moon to the north or to the south of this point? How's that going to work out? In the summer, the new moon is going to be to the south of the sun. And in the winter, it's going to be to the north of the sun. Is that correct? Did what I just say is correct?
I should know this, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's why you were dragged here today.
The moon's almost always going to be to the south. But there's a machlokes about what the Mishnah means. Like,
right.
Does it mean like to the right, to the left, or does it mean above or below?
Right.
But the moon's always going to be to the south, is what you just said?
It's always going to be to the south, because the sun and the moon are on the same line. And since we're in the northern hemisphere, that line is always tilted to the south.
So it's just a matter of how far south.
They say north, and they're in Sheker.
V'kama haya gavoa. What was the elevation of the moon? V'la'ayin haya noteh. Which direction was it pointing? V'kama haya rachav. How wide was it? How wide is the moon? What's the diameter of the moon?
Half a degree
of what?
Of an angle.
Of the right.
Protractor.
What does that mean? If you hold up a protractor?
If you hold up a protractor, otherwise known as a Jacob's staff, or a... what are those things called that sailors have?
Astrolabe.
But they all measure in angles.
Uh-huh.
But probably what the Mishnah means is how thick was the crescent? Was it a little crescent? Was it a big crescent?
V'im amar lifnei hachama lo amar klum. If they say something which is astronomically impossible, then they've said nothing. Then it doesn't count. Then they bring in the second guy, and if the second guy's testimony matches, then their testimony stands. And everybody else that had come to testify, but who were no longer necessary, so they ask him like a few questions. Why? Not because their testimony was needed. After all, we've already been Mekadesh L'Chodesh. So they shouldn't be agitated. That's what we talked about last year. How people get called for jury duty and go and sit there for 3 days and don't even get called. You feel like it's...
It's impossible.
Oh.
These people know that
they're getting a free meal out of it.
But they, in other words, the point is that the Betin has to treat them with some kavod, right? And it's a kavod to be.
It's not necessarily after Kiddush HaChodesh. It could be that they only did Kiddush HaChodesh after they finished with all the Eidim.
In other words, that they waited to say Mekudesh, Mekudesh. Yeah. Maybe they didn't realize that they weren't needed.
Right.
Maybe.
This is like, you know, getting the blood donations from Ethiopians and then throwing them in the garbage.
No. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that because... Because you want to feel like you're... like you've done something. You want to feel that... You want to feel that the Dayanim were... First of all, maybe you're talking about like a simple farmer who goes to Beit HaMikdash... It's the first time that he's there on something besides, you know, just being part of the masses of Aliyah LaRegel. You ever go to a Hasidish Rebbe? You ever daven in a place where there's like a Rebbe or an important Rav or a... When we lived in Baku, we used to daven in Erloy. You know where Erloy is? Erloy's on the corner of... No, it's on the corner of Racheli Menu and Chizkiyahu HaMelech. They have a big building there. It's been recently redid. Sure. They look like Hasidim. They're not Hasidim. They're Hungarians. The Rebbe is a Ben Achar Ben Tam Chasim Sofer. But since we don't know anything, you look at them, you think they're Haredim. You think they're Hasidim. They are Haredim. It's a very friendly place. I'm not. It's really a very nice place. It's a very nice davening. So we were in Baku, we used to daven there sometimes on Friday night. And after davening, everybody lines up, and the Rav shakes hands with everyone. But gives, you know, he's got a warm personality, he's a nice guy, why does everybody feel that like need to do that? And if you're a straight, like, you know, when I would be there, they would know that I wasn't one of them. They could tell.
Oh, gee.
By your hat. My hat gave it away. So if you were an outsider, they were particularly nice. Like the Rebbe was, the Rav was particularly, right? Mashlamcha, Ben Shelcha, right? Why? Because that's, people want to feel that somebody's paying attention to them. So can you imagine, you go, you schlep, maybe even Mechal Shabbos, behet there, but maybe even Mechal Shabbos to get there.
Go.
And, you know, after you wait there for a couple of hours,
you get dismissed.
They say, you're not needed.
Right?
So that's Pachei Nefesh. It's just like a moral, right? But also, Shelo Yetzu V'Nefesh U'V'Shvil Shiyu Regilim Lavo. So that they should be accustomed to come back. So,
next time they'll be needed.
How do you... Yeah, because as if people don't feel... That's the problem with jury duty, right? People don't feel the... Or we spoke about you, as you heard on the recording. Last week I mentioned you, right? Miluim, right? In other words, if you don't want to go to Miluim, getting out of Miluim is a pretty easy thing to do, right? And you see there, people that never do Miluim. And then they're friarim who go, like they go, if you call them once a month, they go for 10 days, right? And they keep They keep going until they tell them you're not allowed to keep coming back, right? Until they give them a prize, so they'll stop coming. They give them an award, they stop coming, right? So that's right. But it's demoralizing to the whole system when you know that people don't take their civic responsibilities seriously, right? We want to encourage people to go. That's the problem with voting. Right, you know, in America, they make it so. I mean, you can understand that people are a little tired of voting. But voting here is really pretty easy. Rarely do you. I don't ever remember waiting to vote more than 15 minutes. I mean, do you? But in America, you know, like they do this. You could say it's done cynically, both from the Democrats and the Republicans, depending upon the district, to suppress turnout in certain areas. They close polling stations. They don't have enough machines. They don't have whatever, so that people will go. You go. You see, there's a line around the corner to vote, so you're not going to vote. And if you do, you're not going to come back next time. No, that's something else. But that doesn't. In other words, that doesn't affect the experience of the voter who gets out of bed and waits online. Right. But I remember my grandparents used to go. My grandparents used to. You'd get dressed up. You'd put on a jacket and tie to go vote. It was like a civic responsibility. It was like a special thing. So it's the same thing. This is a civic responsibility. But there's two ways to read the Mishnah. Is it, they would ask them some questions, shelo yetzu b'fachi nefesh, in order that they will come back?
Yeah.
Or is it two different things? Is it, number one, we want them to feel good. There's a moral component. We want people to feel good about their religious responsibilities. That in and of itself has a value. In addition, we don't want them to be reluctant to answer the jury summons next time, to answer the tzav miluim next time, right? But in and of itself, there's value in treating the bet din. Friday night we were.
But the text doesn't.
There's no vav there.
There's no vav. It's not ubishvil.
Right. But there are mefarshim that read it as two separate things, right? They read it as if there is a vav there. Friday night we were at my sister-in-law, and the kid, you know, like the nieces and nephews and my older kids at least. And we got on the topic of like marriage and the Rabbanut and etc. The level of cynicism that the young generation has about the Rabbanut, I mean, also our generation, but it's even worse, right? It's a really terrible. It erodes, that kind of cynicism erodes all of the faith in the establishment. So that's the Mishnah. So the Gemara says,
"Hi." If I could just add,
yeah,
just said briefly, as it says in the Mishnah, "Lanhu note."
Yeah.
Right, so that's asking about the crescent of the moon, right? See the crescent.
But so that's what the Gemara is going to say.
Before that. Yeah. Right, so when you look at the moon, like in usual pictures, you see it standing up like this. But just before it sets, it's usually like this. But the question is it facing a little bit north or is it facing a little bit south? So just like
meaning,
before,
is it like this or is it like this?
No, is it like this or is it like this? Because it's pretty much like this.
Yeah.
But it's almost always facing south, since we're in the northern hemisphere.
Right. Right.
Right. So. Just in order to do research for the shiur, I went south of the equator last week, and I got this picture of the new moon.
Uh-huh.
And you know, you have to look closely, like an egg, but you can see that it's facing to the right.
Let me see.
Otherwise, north.
Because that's south of the horizon.
Because that's south of the equator.
South of the equator, I mean.
Right. It's a little bit fuzzy. Sorry for the camera, but so. Again, if you don't look at the new moon, you might not notice this, but next week I'll send y'all an email. When you look at the moon, they're sitting on the horizon. It's almost always, you know, it's usually facing a lot to the
But in other words, if you're mamish on the equator, shouldn't it be like kind of like flat on the bottom?
No, it kind of depends on the season also because of the tropics, but yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, even here, it also depends on the season. So you also know if it's going to be more flat or more to the south.
Right.
And there are rare occasions.
In other words, is the crescent going to go, if you're looking at it on a clock, is it going to go from like 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock or 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock? Or is it going to be from like 3 to 9?
It's going to be exactly right. Exactly.
Right. Right, so the Gemara says, "Hainu lefnei chama, hainu litzfona, hainu lachar chama, hainu ledroma." As Gemara says, these two questions are essentially the same, right? In other words, if it's lefnei chama, it'll be on this side, and if it's lachar chama, it'll be on the other side. So Omar, so it is. What do you need both? So the Gemara says, "Omar Abaye." That's what the question was. So in other words, here, let's imagine here. Here's the sun. The brightest force in the galaxy. This bottle of Glenfiddich. That's the sun. The sun shines light in all directions. Here's the earth. And here is the moon, which circles the earth as the earth circles the sun.
So far you got it right.
Yeah. I mean, I did go to first grade. I mean, this much I know. Remember that? I remember that the teacher had that globe. In other words, it was like the sun, the earth, and the moon. And by turning the crank, it showed how they...
You had a good class. Yeah. We didn't have those.
It was like a low-tech. It was like with a crank. The moon is always half illuminated. When we see the crescent moon, it's not that there's a crescent. We're looking at it from an angle. But if you were standing on the sun, you'd have a lot of problems. But if you were standing on the sun, looking at the moon,
you'd see a full moon.
The moon would always be full, except for... when there's a lunar, when we experience a lunar eclipse, right? Because when we experience a lunar eclipse, the moon is here, hidden behind the earth, and the sun is over there. You heard what the Polish Space Authority announced.
I missed that one.
Spokesman for the Polish Space Authority, Jim Jaminski, announced that Poland was going to be the first country to land a manned mission on the surface of the sun. When asked about the fantastic temperature on the surface of the sun, Jaminski said, "We got that problem licked. We're going at night." Mi amar al mi? Chevy Chase, weekend update, sometime around 1979, I'm guessing. So when let's say we're here, right? You know that the sun goes around, the earth goes around and around. You see, the earth really is flat. The earth goes around and around, and when we come up around this side, here is sunrise, right? Here is high noon, right? And here is just before sunset. Because here's the sun and here's the earth. So when we're here at sunset, if the moon is over here, what are we going to see? We're going to see the crescent of the moon along here. Am I correct? Right? But in fact, this whole side of the moon is illuminated by the sun. We can only see one sliver of it. Right? When there's a full moon... that's when it's night and we're here. The moon is up here. The sun is casting the full onto the moon, and we're looking at it in this direction. Right? Correct? Okay. It's not possible for the sun to ever see the dark side of the moon.
There is no dark side.
I mean, the non-illuminated side. Well, no, colloquially, there is not a dark side of the moon.
There's a far side of the moon.
There's two things. There's the far side of the moon. And there's the right now,
the
we're on the...
dark.
At this moment, at 9:05 p.m., we are on the dark side of the Earth.
Right.
Right? In a couple hours, it'll...
Right. There's no permanently dark side of the moon.
Right. The far side of the moon is the side... Since the moon is in fixed orbit around the sun, right? And as the moon doesn't turn around as it goes, right? One side of the moon is always facing the earth. So we never have access from the earth to see the backside. But it's not that the backside of the moon, the far side of the moon, is always dark. When the backside of the moon is between us and the sun, it's exposed to the light. The sun, however, can never see, by definition, can never see the dark. Except for during a lunar eclipse, the moon is always a full moon when seen from the perspective of the sun. Right? And during a lunar eclipse, it's just invisible. It's hidden behind the earth.
It's sort of like the fact that a Levi never sees a coin get a double Leah.
That's right. if you're standing here on the surface of the moon during a lunar eclipse, the earth is dark, but the earth is also much bigger than the sun. In perspective,
yes,
right. So you don't even see like a corona around the earth.
You do see a corona because the earth has an atmosphere, so you actually see a dark earth. You can look on the internet for like fake pictures of it, but you see a dark earth, and then you see like, you know, a ring of, you know, bright clouds. Like
more or less the same as you
sunrise,
see.
You see sunrise and sunset all around the earth, which is why if you ever see a total lunar eclipse, when it gets really dark, the moon turns red because it's seeing
the it's filtering through the atmosphere.
Light of sunrise and sunsets are filtering on through the moon.
So that's the question. In other words, if somebody says, here's the sun, and I saw the crescent moon like this, how do you know that they're not telling the truth? How do you know that they're mistaken? Here's the sun, and here's the crescent moon shaped this way.
It's going to be going right.
Right? It can't be. Because how is the sun going to cast a shadow? I can't cast light this way around. In other words, the light side, the crescent, always has to be facing away from the sun. Right? It's not physically possible. That's the question. The sun never sees the pgima of the pgima is the part that's missing, the defect.
If it helps, there's a picture here. Right, this is lifnei hachama v'acharei hachama, where the moon can set before the sun, but then we're not on the 31st day because then nobody saw the moon. You only see the moon, this moon sets after the sun. Because if the moon is out when the sun's out, then you're not going to see it. So this is Yifnei Achama and this is Achrei Achama, which is the right answer. And here's the definition of the Pigima is the side which is dark. And the crescent, as he was saying, is always going to point away from the sun. You don't see that in this picture, but the sun, you know, the light's coming from down there, which is why that part of it is lit up.
Right.
The moon doesn't revolve on its own axis?
The moon revolves once a month, which is why we always see the same side.
Right. Why?
What we see on the moon is always the same size.
It's always the same size.
Why do we think that it is that way?
It's actually common for large moons in the solar system.
It has to do with
gravitationally, it's gravity and tides. So basically, like the near side of the moon is a little bit thicker than
so
the
gravity.
Far side of the moon. So as it, you know, in the past, it used to spin faster, and over millions of years, because it's heavier on one side, the gravity pulled at it more.
So presumably, initially, when the moon did revolve on its axis,
Faster.
A month was shorter.
A month was shorter because the moon was closer to us, and that's a different but related thing, yeah.
Because the moon is moving, right. Remember Space 1999?
Space Odyssey 2000.
It was a TV show in the 70s about Space 1999. Martin Landau starred in it. You know, from Mission Impossible.
After he finished Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Oh. And then Nimoy was on it. for a season, I think.
Things related to an old TV series, okay.
Look it up, Space 1999. It's about the first moon colony, but something goes wrong. There's like a nuclear explosion on the moon, and the moon breaks loose of the Earth's gravity and is, you know, like lost in space.
I remember that one. Okay.
Yeah, look it up. I had in fourth grade. I had a Space 1999 lunchbox. You know what that would be worth on eBay today?
1999.
Yeah. So then the Gemara says so. Da'amar Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv is a pasuk in Iov. Hamoshel v'fachad imo, oseh shalom bimramav. The power and the awe, the fear is with him. He makes peace in heaven. It's that well known phrase, oseh shalom bimramav, is from this pasuk in Iov. How does Hashem make peace in the heavenly spheres? Hashem has this power and this kind of influence over the universe in order to make everything work out. So what is this talking about? Me'olam lo ra'ata chama p'gimata shelevana. The sun can never see the deficiencies of the moon. Only we see the deficiencies of the moon. Now you know, everybody remembers the Rashi, right? It's like one of the first Rashis you learn in Chumash, after the first Rashi. Right? The first Rashi, right? Lo ayat sarich, right? So then the moon and the sun. Right? So we know that Hashem worked it out that the moon is inferior to the sun. The moon is inferior to the sun because it waxes and wanes. And the moon is inferior to the sun because it doesn't have its own light. Because you can't have two kings ruling with one crown. That's like the meaning of the, you know, everything we say in Kiddush HaChodesh, in Birkat HaChodesh, right, once a month. This idea that like in the future it'll be rectified, right? That as Chazal read that medrash. And there's a medrash on the medrash.
You're talking about in
Kiddush Levana. In Kiddush Levana, yeah. What did I say? I said Birkat HaChodesh. I meant Birkat Levana. It's true that it says in the Sidurim, but what we do on Motzei Shabbos once a month, that's not Kiddush. We say, people say it's Kiddush HaChodesh. It's not Kiddush HaChodesh, is what they did in Beit HaMikdash. Kiddush Levana. Right, so we say it's Birkat Levana, right? But in other words, the midrash on the midrash is that the whole thing becomes an allegory for Am Yisrael, whose fortune waxes and wanes like the moon.
Like the moon,
and that's why you have all of that kind of like messianic echo in the whole thing. David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayam, and
no.
They can't get us. Right? Who remembers Kiddush HaChodesh from when you were a kid?
Kiddush Levana.
Kiddush Levana, yeah. I keep saying Kiddush HaChodesh by mistake. Kiddush Levana. Remind me, where did you go?
Queens.
Did they sing and dance after? No.
Oh,
that's like an Eretz Yisrael minhag that made its way to America after people started coming to Israel. But no, today I think they do it in America because that's the influence of people that came back from
places where the name keep it tight. Mm-hmm. I never saw him until I came to the front, actually. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah. But the Shai have known children in the Eretz.
Well, they're not such a lively crowd there.
is that Hasidic in origin?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's an interesting question.
I don't remember seeing in Muncie.
So the Gemara says, "Me'olam lo ra'ata chama p'gimata shel levana, v'lo p'gimata shel keshet," and neither does the sun see the concavity, concave. Right. In other words, this is concave, and this is convex, right? So the sun, in other words, the sun also produces the rainbow, right? So when we see a rainbow, it goes like this. And the sun only sees the rainbow from above, meaning it only sees like the hump of the rainbow, right? In other words, the rainbow never appears in the sky
like that,
like this, right? So the sun never sees this of the moon, and it never sees this of the rainbow. Why? Pgimatasha levana dechalsha da'ata. If the sun were to see the defect of the moon would chalish. The moon would be weakened. It would be embarrassed. It would be, and it's this compromise that Hashem made with creation, that only the sun has that ongoing power, and the moon waxes and wanes, is apparently unknown to the sun, because from the sun's perspective, the moon is always full.
That's cute.
Right? And if the sun realized, in other words, the sun knows, again,
how does the moon actually realize?
Look, Chazal didn't really think that this
is actual physical reality.
Right? No, it's an allegory. Right? There's a moral message that's being communicated. Right? Adarab, if they really believed this, they'd be over there Avodah Zarah. Right?
Not according to the Ibn Ezra.
Okay. But the sun and the moon, Paschal like the Rambam.
Ibn Ezra thought that this really occurred.
Well, not that he said this. No, I mean, a lot of Mephoroshim, they talk about Sivot Hashem. Like, Kilu, I don't know, some people interpret it as that there's a malach for each one of the Kochavim. So they can have feelings, and they can...
The sun is aware, in this allegory, the sun is aware that it's luminescent on all sides at all angles.
Yeah, that I understand.
It looks at its neighbor, the moon, and of course it only has one perspective on it. And it sees that it's fully lit up.
The moon is always full.
It's unaware. No,
right?
Only on Earth do we have a peak. Only on Earth do we have a peak
the moon would be unaware as well. The moon, only on Earth could you be aware.
No, but the moon... There's
the
stuff
moon knows that it's half dark.
The moon knows that it's back to
the
sun.
It's
half dark. Right. Okay. It doesn't know that it waxes and wanes.
No, but it knows that it's not as great as the sun, and the sun's always...
No, but the impression is also that the sun is unaware that it is the source of light for the moon. Mm-hmm. Right? Why? Because everybody experiences reality filtered through their own experience. I'm the sun. I know that I am a source of independent radiance. Here's another heavenly body.
And it's always full.
Which is lit up.
It's
a full
radiant
circle. It's always full. It's always radiating. Right? I never get a peek behind the curtain, but I presume that it's just like me. Right? There's value to the perspective from the earth where you get to see these two things and you get to experience things differently. It's lahavdil. It's similar to the idea that I mentioned here in Shul a couple of times. And I'm always amazed that people don't say, didn't you say this just a couple of years ago? I assume they check their notebooks. And
you probably said it on Shabbos so they couldn't write it down.
On Motzei Shabbos they... Ben Sora More. Enenu Shomea Bakol Aviv Bakol Imo. Chazal say that, like, there's something strange about the parents. That they looked the same, they sounded the same, they were the same height. Right? Why? Now, Chazal was so disturbed by this idea of the Ben Sora More that
had to be eliminated.
They create so many mitigating requirements that in reality they were able to say Lo Haya Velo Nivra, or minimally that it happened with exceedingly rare what are the what's one of the mitigating limudim? This idea that you had to be right. That in other words, if any of us, right? I've seen all of your spouses, right? None of us could have had a ben sor amora. Meaning, even if one of our kids did all those terrible things that the ben sor amora did, chas v'shalom, the bet din could not have executed him under the din of ben sor amora. Because your wife is not as tall as you, and she doesn't sound like, when I call your house, I can tell if it's you or it's your wife based upon this, just the sound of the voice on the phone, right? So what's the problem of what's Chazal trying to say? Who becomes a ben sor amora? Somebody who has these two parents that see everything in lockstep. That's if you're exactly the same height. You see everything from exactly the same perspective. If you sound exactly the same, what happens in physics when you have two sound waves that are identical? They cancel each other out.
Like noise canceling.
Like noise canceling. In other words, the point is that parenting is about create. Obviously, there has to be consensus, and obviously there has to be a team, but it's about providing stereo sound. It's about providing different perspectives. When you only have, right? We can all live very well with only vision in one eye. You can even have a driver's license if you have vision in only one eye. But what are you lacking if you have only vision
depth
in one eye? You're lacking depth perception. You're lacking the kind of sophistication to be able to make finer judgment calls about distance and about relative size and, right? That's what becomes a ben sor amora. Somebody who, it's all lockstep. It's all one vision. It's all one voice. It's all whatever. So here's the same thing. The sun and the moon look at each other, and they presume that the other one, since on the surface they look the same, they extrapolate from their experience and assume the other one is the same. That's okay for the purposes of creating an illusion of equality. Right? I don't have to be jealous of him, and he doesn't have to be jealous of me. I don't have to feel superior to him, and he doesn't have to feel inferior to me, because we appear to each other as if we're the same. And that's how Hashem creates Shalom Bimromav. Right? The truth is
that the moon knows that it's not the same.
Well, how does the moon know it's not the same?
Because the people living on one side of the moon, they get some...
No, there are no people living on the moon.
They know that there's an area of the moon that doesn't get any heat.
That doesn't get what?
Any heat.
It does get heat.
Well, the moon knows that it's only half lit up.
But the Earth is also only half lit up.
No, the moon is there. The moon is there.
No, the moon knows that he's not like the sun. Because
no, but how does he know that? He thinks the sun may be dark on the other side also.
According to the Midrash, he complained to God that he wasn't as great as the sun. So he knew
something. Afterwards, how does the moon know that actually then changed? In other words, the moon...
Right? He doesn't... Maybe the moon doesn't...
Really know
maybe the moon doesn't
doing.
Really realize that. Right? So anyway, the point is that from Earth...
This is a strange conversation.
Well, it's... Yes. The point is that from the Earth, since we're able to triangulate... Notice, only from the Earth can you understand the motion of the other objects. Right? So what about the Keshet? Why is it important that the sun never sees the underside of the rainbow? Delo lemru ovdei achama gireka mishadye. What's the keshet? The keshet is like, why is the rainbow called a keshet? Because it looks like a bow and arrow, right? But if this is the sun, right, the bow is always shaped this way. So what do we not want? The sun worshippers to look at the sun and to see a bow shaped this way, to think that is the bow. In other words, if the bow is shaped this way, if the convex side is facing the sun, you can't hold a bow that way.
The sun can.
The sun can't hold a bow that way. Right? You certainly can't shoot a bow that way. But if it was in the opposite direction, right, if the rainbow, instead of appearing like a...
Shooting a bow is irrelevant. The fact that a bow is used for a bow and arrow is doesn't relate to how the sun's, to the sun's perspective on the rainbow.
No, but from our perspective, from the perspective of the earth, from the perspective of the Ovdei Chama on earth, if the rainbow was shaped the other way, if there's the sun and here's the rainbow, you know, kind of like a smiley face underneath it, they could imagine that the rainbow is a weapon in the hand of the sun to be shot. And we don't want them to think that. Okay. Now the Gemara says, now the Mishnah says, Kama hayu, the top of Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph, Kama hayu gavoa v'la ayin haya noteh, how high was it, which direction was it tilting? Tana chada litzvona dvarav kayamin. Lidroma lo amar klum. So the Brisa says that if one says that it's towards the north, so then that's accepted, and if he says it's to the south, it's irrelevant. It's not valid testimony. Vatanya, ipcha. Maybe it's the exact opposite. Ledroma dzvarev kayamin. If it's to the south, that's legitimate testimony. Letzvona lo amar klum.
He's quoting two different breakouts here. Is that Mishnah?
Yeah. No, it's two different. And as one is a.
It's a contradiction with the breakout.
Yep. So lo kasha, it's not a machlokas. Kan bimota chama, v'kan bimota gshamim. It depends upon the season. Because again, in the summer, the moon is going to appear to the south. And in the winter, it's going to appear further north. Do you have a picture of this?
It's problematic, I don't know.
The picture or the Gemara?
Depends what you mean by south and north of what? There's a book between Rashi and Tosfos. Is it talking about north or south of
the
west
sun?
Or north,
north
or south?
And south of the sun.
Look at Rashi.
North and south of the sun.
Look at Rashi. Kan bimota chama, kan bimota gshamim. Bimota chama, in the summer, kagon biyom aroch shel tkufat tamuz. Right, on the solstice. Chama shokat l'sof ma'arav l'tzad safon. When the sun sets in the west, it's at the furthest north that it's going to set. If all summer long you look, you plot, right? You know, take a picture of the valley from your backyard, right? And mark, you know, where the sun set each night. At the solstice, asterisk, it's not technically true what I just said, right? It's not technically true that the solstice, the June 21st, is the longest day, the latest sunset.
It's.
You've explained this to me 1,000 times, I never understand it.
It's about true.
Yeah. Anyway, so you can point, you can.
The equinox is tricky.
All right, we'll have to finish. Mm-hmm. All right, so next week is Hanukkah, we won't have shoot. We'll start again here next time.